Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. I'm here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. We're here with Chris. You can find on Twitter at SkateXEdge. And Damien, you can find on Twitter at Damien Johnston. Our number one for the week is The Shadow, The Death of Margot Lane, number one. And that's on Dynamite by Matt Wagner and Brennan Wagner. Ooh, brothers, maybe.
Nope.
Nope. And then Over Under is Bands That Never Released an LP. So we'll see where this takes us this week. And don't forget to head to reviewandroast.com. Check out all of our reviews for movies, books, TV shows, comics, board games, video games. You can buy movie tickets there, so join in the fun, and yeah, let's start the show.
Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
What we read. I caught up on a couple of singles. Nothing really amazing, to be honest.
That's not good.
Yeah, I mean, well, I only read about maybe five or six single issues, just catching up on Darth Vader, catching up on, I think, maybe some Ant-Man. But, I mean, Ant-Man's always good. Vader is...
You talking about Ant-Man number 8?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh,
well,
my God,
maybe
was
not,
crying.
So just settle down.
The one where they're playing poker?
I don't know.
Never mind. I was laughing quite a lot during that one.
But, yeah, I'm thoroughly enjoying the Ant-Man series as... Because there was the first one, now there's the Astonishing, whatever. They're really good if you haven't checked them out. But I probably have a trade out by now, but they're pretty funny. The Vader ones are mostly good. I mean, every now and then you'll get a little slow point, but overall it's really good. And there's the two droids in that book that are just, all they do is talk about killing fleshy, baggy humans. So it's kind of funny. Yeah, other than that, I've been playing a lot of Overwatch and doing some maintenance on the website because it's been kind of a pain in the ass for the last few weeks, but I've got it all straightened out now. So, boom, that's the extent of my week. So I'm going to let Brian talk about air drums while we move on.
Right. Whoa. Might want to edit that out. I read, obviously, the Rebirth books because we did a podcast about it last weekend. The only other one that really... wanted to talk about real quick was the new book on Aftershock called The Revisionist by Frank Barbieri. It's kind of like if Philip K. Dick wrote a 70s Prison Break movie.
Okay.
I mean, that's the best, actually sloppiest way I can describe it. It starts out where this guy is like running through this office building and he's gunning down all these... I don't know if they're droids or if they're other security guards of some kind, but then it like flashes back to him in prison and somehow he ends up with this box and his dad's persona is in the box. Like his dad's passed on, but left him like almost like in the Superman movie where he goes to the Fortress of Solitude and Jor-El, you know, pops up and tells him all this fatherly advice. And it's kind of the same deal where he helps his son break out of prison during a riot. It's pretty, actually kind of awesome.
Awesome.
Actually, I read a sample of it and I was like not really into it, but then I decided to give it a shot anyway. And I'm glad I did because I really liked it. And I really like Frank Barbieri's stuff. Like Broken World was pretty good. And Five Ghosts is a lot of fun. So if you like those, The Revisionist is pretty good. No, I was just going to say, I also I listened to last week's episode, and when the Firehose song came on, I got super pumped until I realized that that song is now as old as Elvis was to our parents when we were in grade school, which is super depressing.
Are you talking about Firehose, like Discord Firehose?
You mean SST records?
Firehouse, I'm thinking of.
It was old when we were kids.
No, mid-80s. So, I mean, when the first time I heard it, I'm pretty sure Raging Full On came out in like 86, so that means the album was only like 2 years old when we first heard it.
Okay, no, you're thinking of that's the cock rock band you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about the good band. Yeah, the post Minutemen, pre major label Firehose.
Oh, okay. All right.
It was 86. Wow, look at you. But still, I was
Corey
nine.
O'Brien, Streets of Fire. I just think like
I didn't listen to last week's podcast yet. So, what did you guys think of Four Kids?
You'll have to listen to it and find out.
Yeah, you got to
just
listen.
Tell me real quick.
It was terrible.
All right.
Worst thing since two Jews walk into a bar.
It came out of Brian's mouth, not me.
It's like a bad. What is it like? I'm trying to think, like a million comedians have used it.
You didn't like it?
No, it's fine. We're just pulling your leg there.
No, I already know Damien's liked it.
No, I liked it. I just hate the fact that no one has it. So I'll just wait for the trade.
Yeah, I had to buy it on Amazon on my Kindle and read it digitally.
Okay. I started reading God Killer. That's a weird post-apocalyptic, satanic, sadistic sex torture kind of story.
Okay.
From what I gather. I can't. I'm on issue 3 where I started. I think I'm probably in the middle of issue 3, but that's a lot of, you know, this is gonna be painful. You're not gonna enjoy it.
Sounds grim.
Yeah, well, some of the dialogue is I'm pretty sure is something like a rapist would say to somebody.
Sounds extra grim.
Yeah. But it's weird. I gotta find out. I'm still trying to figure out like what the whole plot is to it, but
it would be weird if you figured out the entire plot when it was only in the third issue and you
I know.
Ago.
Well, I mean, I don't even have a clear idea of what's like whatever. But I do like the name of the hooker, Angel Fuck. That's pretty cool. And the other one's called Half Pipe.
Isn't Angel Fuck a Misfits song?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
That's the thing I like about Black Mask. You always find references to punk and hardcore in their comics. I mean, rightfully so, though.
Right. Oh, is that a Black Mask, the god thingy?
Yeah. Said? Okay. Yeah, God Killer.
Interesting.
I have the trade of that. I haven't read it yet, though.
But, so far, I mean, I like it. It's keeping me interested. It's definitely interesting. I'm going to start, We Can Never Go Home after that. And I did finally get The Private Eye, which I started reading, and I think I read the first 8 pages, and within those 8 pages, it was already awesome.
Yeah, I have heard nothing bad about The Private Eye.
Nope. It's got Brian K. Vaughan written all over it. And I'm not saying that, like, literally. I mean, like, when you read it, like, if you were to read it and the cover was blank and you didn't say who wrote it or anything like that, you would automatically be able to tell that it was him. But, yeah, the first 8 pages, rule.
Sweet.
And I was just going to... Wait, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say I was just going to sit here and start singing Private Eye because now the song's in my head.
I mean, by Hall & Oates.
They're watching you.
Watching your every move.
So that means we all know it.
Why wouldn't we?
I don't know. Yeah.
Should we do like a fucking barbershop quartet or something right now?
I'm into it.
Boom, 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 boom. Sorry.
Wow.
Your kids, you know, kids nowadays have choice in what they want to hear. They can like go on YouTube and find everyone. We didn't have that choice.
Right? That's true.
Yeah, we got the hits, and that's it. And we had to sit there with a tape, waiting to record the radio, and hope the DJ didn't talk that long over the song.
I wonder if that's why I love the song "Trail of Tears" by Nuclear Assault so much, because I heard it a million times, or because it was actually good.
I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, I remember like a good radio station, you'd wait till like midnight for them to start playing like the good heavy stuff.
Yeah,
I'd stay up late just to record. We had a show called Brain Pain. And I'd be like, "Oh, here comes the Merciful Fate song. I know it's start the tape deck."
I forgot what the station is that was around here. Like it's like in the mid '90s, especially. Like they would play metal from like 10 to 7, and then that was it. And the funny thing is that one time on the show, they had this is 97. They had Jamie Jasta on it, because that's like when Hatebreed started to explode because of that, you know, Satisfaction LP. And they were talking to him, and one of the first shows that Hatebreed played before they got to that point, I think even before they were even on Victory, they played the Black Gigi's House. You remember that, Brian?
Yep.
Damnation?
Yeah, it was Damnation, Turmoil.
Yeah, and Hatebreed.
Hatebreed and somebody else. I can't remember. Yeah, I definitely remember that show. Might have been Disembodied, actually.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe you're right. So, the guy's asking him, you know, I forgot what he said to him, but Jamie Jasta mentions the fact that he played in, you know, someone's apartment. I was like, oh, that's cool. He mentioned Black Gigi. Well, he may actually mention Jim, but I thought that was kind of funny. But anyways, that was going back to what Damien said about metal being on the radio and late at night and you waiting up to catch it. But The Private Eye, very good. Very, very good. And the idea behind it is, I guess the whole premise is that on the internet, everyone's identity has been pretty much been exposed. Like, someone cracked it and, like, is able to tell, you know, like, everyone's identity is kind of, like, just up and out there. You know what I mean? Like, out in the open. So looking up someone and finding out where they live is no problem now. So people actually wear disguises, or more than one disguise, just to keep some kind of privacy about themselves. So... yeah, I thought that was really cool. So, like, there's people, like, within the city, they're walking around, but they're wearing masks. It looks like Halloween. But they're trying to keep their identity because everyone's identity has been exposed, per se.
You know, and that's another thing that kids nowadays will never have to deal with. Like, if I wanted to look up somebody, I didn't have their phone number. Like, I had to pull out the phone book and... just start calling numbers. Is Bill there? No, you got the wrong number. Damn it.
But that's what it's about so far. So, and it's really good. It's very good. Well worth the $50. But I'm glad I only spent $27 on eBay, brand new, sealed.
$50?
It's $50. That's the retail price on the book. I got it for $27.
Is it like some big hardback thing?
It's a hardcover, yeah.
Okay. Jesus, man, that's pretty. It's $50.
Yeah,
that's half all the money I have right now.
I have $2. Does that help?
I have $5.
Well, if you get it on eBay, you can get it for $27. So there you go. Check those out. Check that one out if you haven't. That's my pick for the 2 months.
For the 2 months.
Oh, and Samurai. I read Samurai 3. That thing just keeps getting better and better.
Sweet, I'll check that out.
Did you read number 2?
I did.
What'd you think?
Oh, that was great. Do you remember? I thought it was. I got confused by the variant cover thing.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You did.
Yeah.
Samurai 3 is good. It just like the plot keeps like heightening.
The plot thickens.
It does. It literally does. I know. Was that your His Hero's Gone reference?
What? No,
never mind.
Me trying to sound like I don't even know.
I thought you were making a reference to His Hero's Gone.
No,
I mean the plot sickens.
Yeah, I know. I know it's the plot sickens.
I can see it on my record shelf from where I'm sitting right now.
Or
Monument to Thieves is my favorite though.
Or The Scott Thickens. What?
Ooh.
Nothing. Come on, that was fucking good.
Cricket.
No, Damien liked it. Speaking of
sure.
What else did you like this week, sir?
That's it. It's Damien's turn.
Well, that's what I was referring to.
Oh, okay. I just got a few things. I got three comics, but they were like super expensive when they charged me. I didn't realize it. All from Image. I didn't even think about that. I got the Last Headlopper from the 4-part series. It's really fun. And I got The Fix number 3.
We did that on here, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't remember it. Refresh me.
Nick Spencer.
Pretzels awesome the dog.
Yeah, like shitty cops getting in trouble.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Never mind. Okay. Is that any good still?
Yeah, whatever. It's good.
It is good.
Okay.
Did you read the third one?
No, I just picked it up today because I was out of town, so I didn't get to go to the shop last week.
It's good. It gets crazy. It reminds me a lot of a Shane Black movie, like a Lethal Weapon or Kiss Kiss Bang Bang or something. Or I guess Nice Guys. Someone's told me that's really good too. I haven't watched it yet, but reading the fix made me realize that I think tonight after my kid goes to sleep, I'm gonna watch Kiss Kiss Bang Bang again because that movie's awesome.
Yeah, you don't have to sell me on the fix. I'm already sold.
Oh yeah, no, it's great. And then the most recent Island, which is really, really good.
That's big, thick one, right?
Yeah, the one that Brandon something. I can't remember his name. But I actually sent him a little tweet today telling him how good I thought it was. Just said it was really great. There's a story right at the beginning by this guy, Michael DeForge. He's a Canadian cartoonist. Real simple style, thin, you know, kind of sort of abstract in a way. It's such a good, weird little story. I'll just tell you, it starts off with this in the second panel. This is all the text. It says, "Whenever an American dies, they are reincarnated on a colony on Saturn." The book is crazy. The story is crazy. It's just a standalone little story, and it kind of reads like someone came up with this weird idea and then just kind of wrote it as they went, because it gets weirder and weirder. But it's great. It's super good, and I loved it. So that Island is great. I'm very pleased.
Sweet.
And I think that's all I did this week.
All
right. I'm still reading a couple novels, but that's it.
Okay. Well, before we get into the number one here, did anybody catch the premiere of Outcast?
Yes, I did.
You did? Okay. Well, you want to tell us about it?
Oh, yeah. I gave it 2 goat horns and a 666.
Neat.
Did you watch it or something?
Me? No. I don't have Cinemax.
Yeah, oh. I went and I purchased Cinemax so I could watch it.
I have the number one in front of me, and I flipped it over, and there's an ad for it on the back. I figured if anyone watched it, we could talk about it.
Oh, yeah, here. Do you want me to talk about it? I can talk about it.
Just briefly. Don't get all nerdy.
Okay. I know we've talked about it plenty of times, and it's been discussed on the internet about how some people do like it when a movie or TV show adaptation of a comic book stays true to the comic book, or is even better if it doesn't, because then you get an interpretation of that person's, I guess, outlook on it or whatever. Outcast, the first episode, number one, was true to the comic and every panel, and it was awesome. It was awesome to see those panels come to life. It kicked ass.
Actually, I heard it's creepier than the book.
Yes, it is. Seeing that shit come to life, like on a TV screen, with real actors, is way more fucked. Like when the kid is just like in the beginning, and the kid's just like staring at this bug. He's just staring at it, and he's like motionless. And then all of a sudden, he goes, "Bam!" And he headbutts it straight up against the wall, and then like starts smearing his face on it. It was awesome.
That's weird.
Like, Hell Awaits, like, popped into my head, like, when that happened.
So I take it you didn't follow it up with the Divine Sisterhood of the Yaya Sweatpants, whatever that movie is?
What? Why would he do that?
It's really good. It's really good. Whoever said that it was creepier than the comic, they're right. It is.
And it's the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. Stupid.
Same difference and so on.
Well, that's good. Maybe I'll have to find a way to see it. But
I'm DVRing them.
Well, you have cable. I do not.
Dude, I got a deal. I called up Dish. They cut the price in half. So I'm only paying $5 for Cinemax for 6 months. Once 6 months is up, away Cinemax goes.
No, I used to call and get my bill chopped all the time. But then they basically told me to go fuck myself. And I was like, you know what? I don't need cable anymore. I'm paying 160 $70 a month for two channels that I watch. I'll just watch Netflix and catch up on the shit I missed, and I'll see the shows I want when they hit Netflix. Screw them.
Yeah, no. You got the internet. I mean, if you really want, you can see anything you want.
Yeah, if I wanted to just start downloading stuff again, I could easily do that.
It's just such a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Meh. So, number one. Oh, I'm sorry.
No. I was trying to piggyback off your Egypt Edward Robinson impression there.
Oh.
No, but it was really good. It was really good.
All right, well, I'll have to keep it on my short list, which is actually getting quite long now. That sucks.
It actually, like, it freaked me out. Like, I jumped a couple times as I was watching it.
Well, you're a wuss.
Whatever.
Hey, Chris. Chris.
What?
Boo! Did you just jump?
No.
Lie. All right. Number one for the week on Dynamite, which we haven't done Dynamite in a while, I don't think, but The Shadow by Matt Wagner and someone else Wagner. It's not on the cover. I don't have the sheet in front of me. Sorry. Kill me. So, Brian.
I thought we were professional here.
I am. You're not.
Clearly you are.
I totally am. So this one is Brian's pick, and we're going to let him tell you about it.
Okay. When I was listening to that Glenn Weldon podcast a few weeks ago, he was talking about the origins of Batman, and he was essentially saying that Bob Kane was heavily influenced by The Shadow when he created Batman. And Batman's not really that original of a creation when you think about it. I mean, in a weird way, Batman is a amalgam of Zorro and The Shadow, if you really want to think of it like that, or at least in the beginning kind of was.
But still cool nonetheless.
Oh, Batman's the best. But I figured if The Shadow was a huge influence on Bob Kane when he created Batman, then I should probably get acquainted, because I've been aware of The Shadow for a little while, and I've never even attempted to look into it other than I was aware of the whole tagline, whatever evil lurks in the hearts of men, etc. So anyway, I walked through the comic shop last week, I saw this, and I looked at the cover, and I was like, that cover is really great. And I saw Matt Wagner's name on it, so I was like, oh yeah, that's why it's great, because Matt Wagner's great. And I haven't really delved into any Matt Wagner in a while, because I kind of jumped off the Grendel train when he started letting anybody on the planet write Grendel stuff, and next thing you know, there's ninjas, wizards, and talking dogs. So unless Matt Wagner's writing a Grendel story, I really can't recommend any of them. But the Grendel stuff he wrote, specifically the Hunter Rose stuff, is fantastic. And I've always loved it, so I thought I want to check out some stuff from The Shadow, because I'm not really that familiar. And Matt Wagner, boom, bought it. And to clarify what Scott was bumbling about a minute ago, Brennan Wagner is Matt Wagner's 23-year-old son, who did all the coloring for this issue. And apparently he's also, I guess, Alan Moore's daughter has been writing Sherlock Holmes stuff for Dynamite, and he has done the coloring for that as well. So anyway, from what I've gathered here from reading some info after having read this thing, Margot Lane is kind of the Lois Lane to Superman, or like she is to The Shadow what Lois Lane is to Superman. Although not really. Where Superman's trying to be with Lois Lane, like Margot Lane is with the guy that is the Shadow, and I don't really recall his actual name. But he's like he's a really old character, but for those who are unfamiliar, he's a pretty standard pulp character. He's like a rich society type by day and a crime-fighting weirdo by night. Runs around in a giant black overcoat with a red sash over his face and a top hat, or like a fedora, carries a couple of guns, has a tagline, has a weird laugh. And this one, it starts out, there's this new villain called the Red Empress, and she has all these different factions of criminality under her spell, and crime in New York City has risen in her stead. So the Shadow and Margot Lane travel to China to try and get to the bottom of what's going on with the Red Empress. then they come back and they get attacked by some thugs and there's a kidnapping involved. I don't want to get too much deeper than that as far as giving away the story. As far as the panel layouts go or the page layouts, Matt Wagner is one of my favorites. His layouts look like an old 30s crime film. The coloring is fantastic on this book. Like, a lot of different shades of red, and like the way the interplay between reds and black kind of dominate this book, just, I loved it so much. And it reminded me exactly of why I love the Hunter Rose Grendel stuff so much, because it's very radio serial, pulpy, crime not, like, it's not, I think, like, nowadays when people think crime noir, they think more violent and kind of adult stuff, whereas this is more akin to the pulp stuff from the 30s, the Black Lizard stuff, a lot of the stuff like Otto Penzler has reprinted. I don't know. I don't want to say much more. I'll let you guys chime in. So,
sweet. I guess I will go. No, I agree with pretty much everything you were saying. You know, the thing with Dynamite is, you know, they seem to be pretty hit or miss for me. Like, either their books are really good or they're just really bad. Like, there seems to be no middle ground. And this one definitely, when Brian picked it, I was like, oh, this looks neat. And I was like, oh, it's Dynamite. I'm like, oh, geez. But when I read it today, I was actually super impressed. Like, I really enjoyed this book. And did anyone else get the, like, it almost seems like he can make himself look like, you know, or he can project his image over other people, which I thought was kind of dope.
Dope?
Yeah. I'm pretty street now. I had to go on the Wikipedia and learn about him a little bit today, and I fell in love with the character kind of reading about all the Wikipedia stuff.
Yeah, I wish I would have done that, but, like, I've been super busy at work lately, so I don't have time to do, like, anything but work, so it kind of sucks, but meh.
Well, apparently, that part comes from apparently he's supposed to have some sort of power that he learned while traveling through Asia that could cloud men's minds, and I think they've sort of adapted that. Apparently, that was born out of necessity, because in the 30s, in the radio drama, it was hard to explain to people that the shadow was hiding. So they had to just come up with sort of this catch-all ability that would make it so everyone listening would understand that the two people in the room couldn't see the shadow who was in the room with them. Like, it just didn't work on a radio thing to have someone hiding in a room with other people.
Makes sense.
That was like a power they came up with to make the radio play go well. And then because after they moved away from the radio thing and moved into, you know, comics and television and the Alec Baldwin movie and all that stuff, it's just a power they kind of kept going with. So I thought that was kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, I mean, from what I read, at one point, the Shadow was the most popular character in all of fiction and in entertainment. I mean, obviously, that's not really the case now. I don't think a lot of people are that aware of the character. But again, like, this feels more like classic pulp fiction from that era when he was at his most popular. I mean, you've got, you know, a lot of tropes that kind of have fallen by the wayside. Like, you know, the femme fatale and the whole damsel in distress thing, the weird, wacky secret traps and so on, the scaling up the wall with the suction cups, like, all that stuff is super outdated, but it adds so much charm to this book for me, because it's so informed by old movies and old movie serials and all those, because everything now is so violent and bloody and this, that, and this is so more kind of like the, hey, what are you doing there? See, that kind of, I just, like, you could just tell, like, Matt Wagner is really well versed in that era of pulp fiction and noir, because it totally shines through in this book.
Yeah, it's stuck, like, perfectly in the 30s when all the pulps are being serialized. Like, they take a steamer, you know, back from, like, the east at one point instead of flying back. But it shows, like, the Indiana Jones, like, travel thing at one point with all the different arrows going to all the different places, because there was no direct flights, you know, from New York to Indonesia.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
And that one part of, it's not a, that one panel where it shows, like, the newspaper heiress with the looks like a leopard for a pet, and it's got the big splash of the front page saying shipping heiress missing, and I was like, oh, that's so good.
Mm-hmm.
All this stuff just reminds me of like old like James Cagney movies or something.
Yeah, see?
He's got the Shadow, by the way, has great villains, at least the names of the villains. My favorite probably being the Death Giver.
Straight to the point, huh?
The Punch Deliverer.
It's so good. There's a lot. There's the Black Dragon, the Black Falcon, and the Black Master. But of course, there's also Gaspar Zemba.
That's great. So,
very. I'm gonna look up a lot more Shadow stuff after this.
Yeah, I think I might too.
Yeah, and especially now that I've kind of been reinformed of the Shadow Grendel crossover that he did about a year ago, now I really want to read it because I think it's the Hunter Rose Grendel, which is my favorite of that series, I guess.
Yeah, I never read Grendel.
I could tell you from the stuff I've read, it's not all great, but the really good stuff is really good. Like, Behold the Devil was the last thing he did, like, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It was, like, an 8-issue series that they had collected. I think Dark Horse put it out. That thing's fantastic. I stumbled on Grendel purely by accident. I found, a hardcover in a discount box for, like, $3. I was like, oh, for $3, I'll give it a try. And I ended up loving it, so. But, again, not all of it's great.
Isn't Grendel, like, a bad guy?
Yeah. I think he's actually a crime fiction writer by day and a murderer by night, or a criminal or something like that. It's really, yeah, and his nemesis is a werewolf.
Just
I am on board.
It's super good. But then they get like when they get into like this whole Grendel universe and there's all these like ninja clans, it's kind of like not always as good. I don't know.
Just an FYI, the Shadow complete radio show collection, including more than 250 shows, is on Amazon for $4.95. Like, I might just download this right now, and I'll be listening to this on the way to work every day.
I'm sure every plot is essentially the same. Like, the framework's probably exactly the same.
There's only so much you can do with radio, see?
He's, like, on the patio smoking a cigarette, and he hears a scream in the distance, and he runs, and then there's a woman tied up, and he has to save her, but just as he's about to grab her, a shark jumps out of the floor for no reason.
You're no fun.
I'm not saying it's bad.
How's it end?
He gets eaten by the shark and he punches his way out. Nice. And then I don't know.
Not gonna lie, most of the Shadow stuff I'm seeing here is all like from the last 5 years. There's a handful of stuff that's like kind of old, but most of the stuff on here I'm seeing is like super recent. And has anyone seen the Alec Baldwin movie?
No, but I really want to know. I mean, I'm sure it's bad.
It's got 4 out of 5 stars on here.
Does it?
Yes.
Oh, now I'm definitely buying it. Because I saw it at Barnes & Noble on Blu-ray for like $7. And I was like, I should buy this. But what if it's terrible? Now I'm going to buy it. I have to see it. Alec Baldwin as a Shadow? Are you kidding me? It's got to be amazing.
54% of the people gave it 5 stars. 29% 4 stars. And then 8, 5, and 4 for 3, 2, 1. I think a lot of people dig this movie.
I will check it out. I went to look last night to see if it was on demand, and it is, but you have to rent it for on demand for like $7 or something. I was like, well, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, you can
buy
it. But
they had a trailer, and I was like, oh, cool, a trailer. And I put it on. It's not a trailer. It's like a 20-second clip of the movie, just some random part of the movie.
That's weird.
Like a car drives by, and that's it.
It was actually in a car.
Oh, my God. I have to see this movie now.
Bill Sienkiewicz did some Shadow stuff in the like early 90s that I had because at the time I was a huge fan of Bill Sienkiewicz and collected all his shit, but I actually never read them, so now I feel dumb.
Did you still have it, or did you get rid of it?
No, I don't have it anymore. I sold a bunch of my comics a long time ago, and I sold all those. But he did a line called Shadows and Light where someone named Helfer, I think, wrote it. Yeah, Helfer. And Sienkiewicz drew it, and it was, you know, it was back, I think, when he was at his peak, late 80s, early 90s.
What other stuff?
Around the Elektra Assassin era.
What other stuff has he done?
Bill Sienkiewicz?
Yeah, because I know the name, just like I'm drawing a blank on his work.
Let's see, he did Elektra Assassin, he did Stray Toasters, he did like the Jimi Hendrix biopic book that came out in the 90s. He did New Mutants for a long time. What else did he do? He did Big Numbers with Alan Moore, and that was like one of the great failures in like Alan Moore history, where Bill Sienkiewicz had done two issues and they're really great and like hyper photorealistic, and then he gave the comic over to his assistant at the time. It was this guy I knew named Al Columbia, and Al Columbia like had a breakdown or something, as he's prone to do, and basically destroyed the third issue, and it just never came out. It was a 12-part series that just never got finished because Al basically drove the car off the cliff. But yeah, that was one of the Bill Sienkiewicz things. He's got a bunch of stuff. His more recent stuff has been real computery looking, and it doesn't really look as good. He did the cover to Soylent Green's second record.
Really?
Yeah. On my recommendation.
You told him to do it? Are they?
Well, no, Relapse. Actually, my friend, the guy who used to do Playing Enemy Records, his name's Gordon Conrad. He worked. He was one of the people at Relapse, and Escape Artist Records was his label. That's what we were on. It was kind of his label.
Yeah, I always heard that there was some kind of weird tie with Relapse and Escape Artist.
Escape Artist basically existed because Relapse passed on ISIS, and Gordon was like, well, this is insane. Like, ISIS is going to be fucking giant, so I'll just put them out. So he started his own label. But anyway, Gordon had called me because he knew I knew a lot of artists, and he's like, hey, who should do artwork for Soylent Green? They really like that Mooka guy, but of course that guy's been dead for 100 years. Like, who could draw like that? And I was just suggested, I go, oh, Bill Sienkiewicz can draw like that. You should get him. And they totally did.
So you don't know Bill Sienkiewicz, or you do know him?
No, I don't know him. I've met him before, but I don't know him. It was just someone that I knew they could get in touch with, and I knew would probably do it. Oh, yeah, he also did Moon Knight for a long time. Bill Sienkiewicz did. That was like his first big thing.
Oh, okay.
Someone Mouth Secrets kicks ass.
That is a good record.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think the record Bill Sienkiewicz did was the one after that one.
Oh, Deleted Symphony for the Beaten Down?
I believe so.
That one's good, too.
Yes.
And so is Confrontation.
But anyway, yeah, Shadow. I wish I had read that now. I feel dumb. I bet if I go to Half Price Books, I can find them probably for like a buck.
That's a good idea. I might have to do that myself. I'll do it without Brian, though, so he'll cry.
I have a car.
Damn it. Foiled again.
And a bike. And right. A messenger bag.
Well, I feel like Chris hasn't said a peep about The Shadow, so we're just going to assume he hated it, and let's number it. Wow. Nothing.
No, you guys said everything that I was going to say, so.
Okay. Well, for real then, I guess we can number it. Yes, no?
Sounds good.
Brian?
Sure, go.
Unless Chris wants to say anything.
No, I mean, you guys pretty much hit the nail on the head. I don't think anything that I was going to say, you guys already mentioned.
Sweet.
He got the dialogue right. He got the, you know, everything about it says, yeah, this thing could have came from the Depression era.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, like, it's if someone gave it to you and you didn't know anything about it, you would have said, oh, you would have just probably, I would have probably just assumed that it was written then.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
The feel of the book and everything is spot on. So I dug it.
All right, well, if we're going to
number it. Reminds me of old time radio.
Is that supposed to be funny? Because, I mean, old time radio.
No, you and I have had a discussion about this.
I know.
Yeah, I do like old-time radio.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay, then. I knew that because we talked about it before.
All right, then. So,
I'm
saying
the comic reminded me of that.
I guess I'll start with numbers. This thing was super entertaining, and I'm giving it an 8.5.
I'm going to give it an 8.5 as well. It's nice to kind of reintroduce myself to Matt Wagner's work because it's been a while. And
been a while.
Now I need to kind of delve a little deeper into his, because I guess he's been doing stuff with The Shadow now for a couple of years, so now that's kind of moved kind of high up my list.
7.5.
I'm doing an 8.
All right.
I'm very happy that made me want to learn about the Shadow again. I have a new thing to be excited about.
Ditto. Much better than learning about Bob Sludd.
Whoever that is.
Some guy.
Oh.
It's been a running joke at work now for 3 days. Oh.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even catch that when you texted it to me. I was just like, yeah, who cares? And then like an hour later, you guys were still going, and I'm like, oh, I get it. I'm smart.
I'm more excited to read that, what's that guy, Michel Foucault. I'm more excited to look up his talk on what an author is. I thought that was pretty cool.
What is that from?
I mean, it's from that article. Let's see if I can find it real quick. He was just the one, that article begins with them talking about what.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a cool concept. The idea that like there was a period of time where nothing was really credited to an author because that didn't really seem to be really important anymore. But then now, when you had to start crediting people based on because of rights and all those things, that's became that the author's name became something kind of important. I mean, we recognize things as being written by Alan Moore, having that now it means something or has a little extra weight to it, or we just talked about Mac Wagner, and when you read a comic by him that he's written, it adds a lot of history because you have his whole history to pull from and like to contrast and compare with what's current. So I saw that concept was interesting, and then that article gets into like the whole Captain America thing and how in comics you don't really have that thing. Like, Captain America was written by Jack Kirby, like, before America got into World War II, and now this whole time Captain America has been a, as they say, a metaphorical secret Nazi, and I think that's kind of interesting. So they were saying like when Captain America was first published, him punching Hitler was totally controversial because America wasn't in the war yet, and a lot of Americans like Henry Ford and Charles Lindbergh, they mentioned in the article, were like totally on board with Hitler. And apparently Kirby and whatever his guy's name, I should look that up, Simon.
They were on board with Hitler?
Yeah.
You know what I'm...
As in...
Like, they were screw the Jews. Yeah, man, that's awesome.
Oh, geez, that's...
I mean, because people didn't have a lot of these people didn't understand there was Nazis.
That's
where like
I was hoping you weren't getting to, but I knew that deep down that's what you...
Yeah, I knew Ford was a sympathizer, and I'd heard that Disney had some sympathies too, and it was apparently not uncommon back then. I mean, saying that at the time when Captain America hit, when they were first doing Captain America, they were actually getting, Joe Simon and Jack Kirby are both Jewish, but apparently they were getting death threats for that comic, because that comic was like anti-Nazi.
Yeah, actually, I've read, and I don't know if this is actually true, but I read that Prescott Bush, George Herbert Walker's father,
mm-hmm.
was actually a Nazi sympathizer himself and may have been involved in funding some of their activities at one point. So, and I believe he was a member of the U.S. Congress or something to that effect at the time. Again, it might be unsubstantiated, but I've read that may have happened. It's very possible I am completely wrong.
Right. I don't find that hard to believe. but there's that whole article just kind of goes into that, but somebody says in here, who's it, Jessica Plummer, mentions the whole Steve Rogers being a Hydra agent, said like, what her quote basically is, this isn't my first rodeo. I know how comics work. He's a Skrull or a triple agent, or these are implanted memories, or it's a time travel switcheroo. So there's a thousand way Marvels can undo this reveal, and of course they will, because they're not about to throw away a multi-billion-dollar piece of IP. Steve Rogers is not going to stay Hydra any more than Superman is going to stay dead. So, I mean, that's kind of cynical, but it's probably true. I don't know. It's just, I didn't read, I obviously didn't finish the entire article, but I thought it was pretty interesting. About the idea of an author can just sort of take over a property, and that property no longer has that weight of being created by that author.
Yeah, I mean,
like when people pick up the Shadow, when Matt Wagner takes the Shadow up, he's not like, oh, and by the way, Shadow also has like plastic magnets powers all of a sudden. Like, you know, he's that they're not going to do that because there's some, they have some reference to that. But then when this new guy took over Captain America, he was like, yeah, fuck you guys, I'm going to do this.
Or just like Geoff Johns when he decided to make the entire DCU a thing that exists in Dr. Manhattan's balls, pretty much.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that them to back up the last comic, and it's all in Tommy Westfall's mind. Did you guys ever see the end of Hill Street Blues or heard about the Tommy Westfall thing?
Was that
no,
the thing
I'm
still
laughing at Brian saying that the DC universe exists in Dr. Manhattan's balls.
I'm actually sort of paraphrasing a Joe Rogan bit, but yeah. I have to give credit.
Yeah, you guys know that Hill Street Blues thing, though. Like, all of television takes place in the mind of an autistic child.
Wait,
have you seen that thing?
Wasn't there something about a snow globe or something like that?
Yeah, like the very last episode of Hill Street Blues is this really crazy episode where you basically get this reveal that everything that happened in this hospital. Or is it, wait, is St. Elsewhere or Hill Street? Hey, St. Elsewhere, sorry. I think I'm
Hill Street Blues?
No, I believe, pretty sure it's St. Elsewhere. Hill Street Blues is the cops, right?
Elsewhere
is the hospital.
Yeah.
I think, I think the kid's name's Tommy Westfall, I believe. And he, it backs up, like, the end of the series ends with, all the guys you'd known as, like, doctors and stuff, turns out they're, like, just a family, and they live in this apartment in New York City, and, like, instead of being a surgeon, like, is a construction worker, and they talk about this kid Tommy, who was on the show at one point, and like, yeah, all he does is stare in that snow globe all day, and it shows it's, like, the hospital where the show is taking place is just in this snow globe, and this kid's just staring intently at it. So, like, the entirety of this whole reality is just taking place in this kid's mind. But then if you use that show as the center of that kid's reality, there's spinoffs that happen. And all of these spinoffs connect through different characters. And so basically you can take all of television and connect it to the show. And so all of television that we know, like Friends and Strange Luck and X-Files and The Simpsons and everything, is all in the same reality. And it all takes place in this one kid's mind.
Where's this kid live?
Chicago, I think.
Nice. I gotta go find him.
Well, I mean, I think we might be in the kid's mind, too. This might be Elon Musk's simulation thing, if you guys heard about that.
Yeah, I was just reading about that the other day. I know it's always been, like, one of those, like, what-if things, but this guy's, like, hardcore intent on, yeah, we exist in a fucking video game, more or less.
Who's Elon Musk said this?
Yeah.
Is this Elon Musk's entrance music when he goes into the ring?
St. Elsewhere theme music. I didn't even know Howie Mandel was in this show.
Yeah, man. There's a bunch of guys that you'd recognize in that show. I think David Morse is, I think, on that show.
Wasn't
he awesome?
Wasn't Denzel Washington on one of those shows?
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. There he is. Boom. Holy crap, dude.
Young man, I just sent you guys the map. So if anyone cares, look up Tommy Westfall, and it's Westphall. And the map is incredible. I know this is getting really off the rails here, but I mean, when you look at the shows that connect, like Degrassi High, like everything, and it's all through.
I used to watch Degrassi Junior High.
Well, it's connected. It's in Tommy Westfall's mind.
Oh, okay.
I've actually never watched St. Elsewhere, so like none of this is going to make sense to me. I don't think.
One of the big. The big connectors is Richard Belzer, because you know he plays Detective Munch on Homicide. I don't know if you remember, guys, watched Homicide: Life on the Street, but it's about Baltimore cops, and he plays Detective John Munch. And so he did this, and he had a crossover on St. Elsewhere, and then from there he started just guest starring as John Munch on tons of stuff. Like he was on X-Files as John Munch. He was on of course all the Law and Orders. From there, there's other, like, I think he was on Crossing Jordan or something like that. Like, he just did so many guest spots on other television shows as Detective John Munch, therefore bringing all of those shows into the reality of St. Elsewhere. And then, then you have connectors like X-Files that had connections like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Veronica Mars has connections to it, CSI, Party of Five. I mean, there's all the, it's just crazy when you get into it. A lot of times it's little things like Easter eggs, like someone's like talking about some corporation on X-Files, and that corporation happens to be the corporation that is evil in an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So there's the connection there. So they do little things like that. Or, you know, Simon and Simon was on Magnum PI once, you know, little things like that. But I don't know. It's super fun. I know this is totally off the rails of what we're talking about, but
it is and it's not. Because, I mean, like I said, now with Watchmen being fair game, it's only a matter of time before, you know, Death of the Endless shows up, you know, riding in a taxi with the Blue Beetle or something weird like that.
I'm into it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all right with things. At this point, like, I just pretty much figure that everything is a part of everything because nobody cares. So as long as the story's interesting, I guess that's fine. I tap out.
Or again, we are just in assimilation, and this is just all, you know.
I need to read this article because I need to know what bullet points he's making in terms of us being a video game.
He's actually saying that he thinks it's highly unlikely that we are not a simulation.
Yeah.
He thinks it's like a 1 in a billion chance that this is actually reality.
Yeah. Not that a video game per se, but a computer simulation. He is 100% convinced that we don't actually exist.
Then I want, like, jumping and kicking abilities and, like, endless amounts of money. Cause...
Yeah, turn off the stupid gravity filter and let's do this.
Yeah, they were talking on Harmontown this week about this exact thing. And Dan, I think one of the guys actually said, he goes, well, then where the fuck are the gnomes and the fucking unicorns? Like, why can't we have those things if this is just a simulation?
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the most boring simulation ever. And it's also, like, really super dangerous because all these countries have nuclear weapons. Like, why don't we all have, like, I don't know.
Well, that's one of the things people are saying is, like, what if this is a simulation as to figure out what the best, what if this is just one decision, like a, you know, an algorithm is basically playing out all the possible scenarios. So this is the one where North Korea nukes America. Like, it's not going to, it doesn't actually happen, but this is just the one where that does happen. So they can see what, so the computer can now decide what's going to happen. Like, there's, this is a projected reality that's, just a decision. So this isn't even the one that's important. Like, this is just one of the side decisions. Like,
I think this
I feel is... like my whole life has been a side decision.
I think this is Elon Musk using this whole complicated hypothesis as a means to go, well, I'm a billionaire and that's just how the computer simulation works. They'll just deal with it. I can't help that you're poor.
There's pretty good arguments to argue against the concept of free will. And I don't know how much different that is than his ability, his little philosophy there.
I just think he's going to Mitt Romney himself into the center of the earth with all the gold.
He might.
He's just preparing us all mentally for the fact he's going to take like 1/10 of our entire nation's wealth into outer space with him, where it will also be worthless. Because I don't recall that you can, you know, there's no exchange rate for the dollar on Mars. Now we have officially, we've derailed, we're into the canyon, we're floating down the river.
Yep,
salmon
yep.
are jumping in and out of the windows. And the bears are lurking.
Sweet. So, I guess we can bring it back around to over-under, which this week is bands that never released an LP. I am going to gracefully bow out because I don't think I can even name one because I don't pay that close attention, I guess. I don't know. But I'm assuming this is going to be a huge nerd fest of 90s hardcore and punk rock with these three. So I will let them at it.
Weak. All right. my overrate is probably going to make Chris mad, but I don't know what to say. I'm going to pick Burn.
He did put out an LP, dude.
When did they put out an LP?
On Equal Vision.
Oh, I looked that up. It's a mini LP, so that doesn't count. It's 12 only got
inch whatever.
It's only got 5 songs, and it's only like 19 minutes long. That does not make
6 songs.
It's still like 18 minutes long. It's not an LP.
All right.
No, because I was like, oh, can I still pick them? Because I really, really never got this band at all. And I watched a video of them from like a year ago. and they played the first song off the 7-inch, and I'm like, yeah, I still don't see why people love this band. I don't get it.
7-inch is awesome.
It's 7-inch.
Yeah, I like them.
All right. I guess I know a lot of people like them. There was a time in my life when I thought they were okay, but I never really was like gaga over them, and I don't get it really.
You know, I really love it. I love the two songs that never came out on anything until later. But then when I heard them again later, like when they kind of re-recorded them. Get the fuck out of my face with that. Go on account of your dumb ass. What?
Now, I'm a fucking race car, right? And you got me in a red. And I'm just saying that it's fucking dangerous to have a race car in a fucking red. That's all. I could blow.
Oh, you ready to blow?
Yeah, I'm ready to blow.
Well, I'm a mushroom cloud laying motherfucker.
Have I lost my mind?
I love that part.
Are you doing last week's over under?
No. I just like he says, I'm a mushroom cloud laying motherfucker. Oh man, sorry. Go ahead.
Like, is that just from Pulp Fiction? That's not like a sample on.
Yeah, it's just from Pulp Fiction.
So that was total non sequitur.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with anything.
Okay. I thought maybe I had a stroke or something.
No, you're perfectly fine.
All right. Well,
what was Scott's overrated?
He's bowed out of this.
Oh, he is? Pose. What a pose.
Okay, well, pose your way into your pick there, guy.
That's funny that you have to pick an overrated that never put out an LP. It's kind of like an oxymoron.
How so?
Well, because if we're picking an overrated band that never put out an LP, you don't really want to hear that band put out anything more to begin with.
Right, but there were people that love that record or band or demo, so henceforth, go.
Damien, you go. I'm still thinking.
Okay, well, I went total hardcore with both of mine because I think that was actually the easiest thing to pull from because so many hardcore bands only did a 7-inch or a demo. But I went with Project X.
Yes, I forgot all about them.
Yeah, I did love it for certain reasons when I was younger, but it's stupid.
It actually is
well,
incredible.
It was meant as a joke, really.
It was
tongue in cheek.
But the way people treated it, like it was almost a religious experience.
Well, yeah.
It was it
was funny, but it made people dumber. You know?
Yeah, it was awesome for a minute, but then as you started to get older and you were around for more than 6 months, you started to go, "Oh God, this thing's really just stupid and cheesy."
I sold my bootleg 7-inch to some kid, and I was like, dude, this is a bootleg. I sold it to him for, I think, like $90 on eBay. I remember just feeling bad. I was like, geez, seriously, man? Like, this thing is terrible, you know? I'm as straight as the line that you snort up your nose.
It was one of those records, because they only made so many of them, until it got repressed and
bootlegged. Well, it only came out with that Schism zine.
Yeah, I think it's 500 copies, and most of them sold at like some show in Connecticut at fucking whatever that
like
place is called.
1987. Oh, like the Anthrax.
Yeah, the Anthrax.
But yeah, like, and even as it got like repressed and bootlegged and so on, there was this. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but it seemed like there was this like mystique about that band because they didn't really do anything. So you hear about those lyrics, and you're like, "Oh my god!" And then you hear it, and you've already built it up in your head to be the greatest thing ever, so I admit I bought one of those bootleg t-shirts somebody made up that look like the originals if there ever really was
one. I have a bootleg one.
Yeah, I did too.
I have a bootleg long sleeve.
I don't think there ever was officially a shirt. I think they were all bootlegs.
I mean, definitely, it's kind of the charm of the whole thing. It's just when it stopped getting charming, I think, is when I kind of stopped having a lot of patience for it. I was well aware that it was silly, you know, that they were being ridiculous. I guess originally they had been Youth of Today songs, but Ray was just like, no, absolutely not. Like, we are not doing that. And so Purcell was like, fuck it, let's just do it. Like, it'll be fun. So they did that band. And It was cool, but for what it was at the time. But at this point, like, it has not held up either. If you've listened to those songs again lately,
I don't think I have the record anymore.
I don't have it either. I traded mine and got an Insight on Purple.
Nice.
I may have traded mine for I don't even know.
And mine was a bootleg too.
I don't know if mine's a bootleg or not. I don't know if I have it or what I did with it.
But if you can imagine they had done a full length, like, it would have been ridiculous.
They did. It was like, called Chorus of Disapproval.
Yeah, but that's not ridiculous, though. That's actually awesome.
I'm not a fan. I did like Legendary Carrie Nation, though. That was pretty, like, militant straight edge.
Carrie Nation's good, too.
Yeah, I like them. That was a Dan Mahoney band, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And Big Frank.
Yep. When bands are still doing the scissor beat. Fucking love that thing.
I haven't listened to that thing in a long time. I know I have it.
That should have been my underrated.
I can't even listen to it in years, but I know I used to love it.
It is. It's a good record. It's a good 7-inch. I guess you want my overrated then.
Do it.
Grip.
Okay.
Were they overrated, though?
What?
Were they overrated? I remember everybody hated them. I felt like everybody
hated
them.
Well, they didn't put out an LP. I don't know. Whatever.
They put out a 10-inch, but yeah, they never did put out a full-length.
That was Dayspring.
Same band. Same exact music. No, I guess there was a weird contingent of people that liked them. I actually did like them for a while. I'm sure if I listened to it...
Their one song on that 7-inch wasn't bad, but as the rest of it... Your curiosity has definitely killed my cat. Remember that cheese ball line?
I remember taking the day off work to go see them.
I bet you feel stupid.
Nope. I got a day off work. Why the hell would I hate... Why would I be mad about that?
Because you could have did something else instead of going to see Grip.
Yeah, it wasn't like the best show ever. It was them and Ashes and maybe, I don't know.
Where was it at?
It was at the Fireside. There was like 11 people there.
Including, I don't think I even went to that.
It was right the first summer the Fireside existed. So there was, if you went to a show there.
Burn Fatal.
Yeah, it was that summer. If you went to a show there and there was more than 40 people, that was considered a huge success.
Yeah.
It was like a Wednesday night. I think Jim booked it like 2 days before it happened. I think they called him from like Columbus, Ohio. Like, oh, do you have anything? He's like, oh, let me check. Yeah.
Man, I forgot those days where you could book a show like the day of. The only time I ever saw Ashes, I played with them in West Virginia. And our show had fallen through, so someone just put together a show in a storage locker that day with, like, us and Injun Kid and Ashes, like, someplace just off the beach. It was crazy.
But see, that's a good show to me right there.
It was a good show, but it was, like, three bands that all, like, our shows all fell through, so they just threw us all in a storage locker. And, like, you know, like, 60 kids showed up. I was like, this is great.
That is pretty rad, actually.
I mean, I would have stayed for all three, actually.
It's good.
I would have stayed for all three even now. Well, I would have stayed for two right now.
Injun Kid got on the show because we were walking down the street and we ran into them. And they were just like, oh, we have the day off. We don't have a show. We're like, oh, we're playing a show that we just got this day today.
You're like, hey, what are you guys doing here?
Oh, man, that's awesome.
So, yeah, Grip.
All right, Grip, yeah. Fucking Grip.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Underrated. I thought of another one just now. So I'll do two.
Oh, I got at least four underrated.
All right, I won't do my second one because you might have picked one of mine or my second one. So I'll stick with the original one, and that is Irony of Lightfoot.
No, you're right. I didn't pick that one.
I don't know who that is.
They did.
Weren't they on Wreckage or something like that?
Yeah, they had
or...
two 7-inches on Wreckage. It was some of the members of that band, Sons of Abraham.
Yeah.
I remember... For some reason, at that Detroit festival in 98, I was so dying to get that Sons of Abraham album because I had heard so many good things about it. And I just remember, like, all this buzz about it. And then, like, 2 months later, they played, like, four shows here over a weekend. And I saw them every time. And every time I was like, oh, my God, this band's not really good at all. And I don't even remember how I ended up with that Irony of Lightfoot record, but I ended up buying it. And I was just like, oh my God, these guys should do this. This is so much better. And it's real. It's almost like making, I don't know how to explain it. It's just a really good record. I actually listened to it like 6 months ago for the first time in years, and it still holds up. I mean, for that style of music, for like late 90s hardcore, it's really fucking good. Still better than Sons of Abraham.
They're all right.
Who?
Sons of Abraham, I'm saying.
Oh, I didn't like them.
They're okay.
I will check that out. Irony of, what is it?
Irony of
Lightfoot. Yeah, I remember that. Because Niraj was telling everyone when that set, he's like, dude, you got to listen to that 7-inch. I'm like, really? Like, okay.
I'm writing it down. It's got to be on YouTube, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I know during that time everyone was in, Niraj was telling me about Irony, Lightfoot, and Silent Majority. Silent Majority is okay, I guess.
There it is. Ibix?
That's it.
7-inch? All right. All right. Chris, what's yours?
I have a few, actually. I have a few. And I'm going to go through them all. I think one of them's probably a pretty clear and evident choice. That would be Inside Out.
Oh, that's a good one.
Because, obviously, the 7-inch rules. And they were supposed to do a whatchamacallit, an LP, which I believe was supposed to come out on Ebullition.
That's weird.
Irony, the irony of it is that it was going to be called Rage Against the Machine. Didn't you guys ever hear that?
That does sound familiar. I bet I did hear that back in the day.
So, that was one band I would have liked to seen an LP. Insight would have been another one. Just saying.
Yeah, you're really into Insight.
I love Insight. I still love Insight. I love Insight back in 91, and I love Insight in 2016.
Okay.
Don't ask me why. I just do. I don't know. I like that record. Point Blank should have put on an LP.
Point Blank.
I don't think I ever heard them.
They're on Nemesis 2.
I'm writing these all down.
You never heard, Brian, you've heard Point Blank, right?
If they're what I think they are, and I'm about 50-50 on whether I remember them, I remember them being horrible. I could be wrong. But
shut your pie hole.
I'm saying I'm half and half on whether or not I remember them.
Hold on a second.
Don't play them.
I can't even find it, so don't even worry about it.
Send me a link.
All right, that's what I'll do. Just chill out, brosif. Powerhouse should have done that.
I knew you were going to pick that. And
why wouldn't I?
I don't know, because that thing's really bad.
No, it is not.
It's so bad. I listened to it like 2 weeks ago. For the first time in like 15 years, I was like, oh my God, this thing.
In my life.
That thing is awful. Oh my God. I'm going to go ahead and say Point Blank's probably terrible now that you said that.
Oh, shut up.
Because the band you should have picked and you missed out on is Alone in a Crowd.
Jesuit.
Alone in a Crowd.
Oh, Jesuit's a good one.
That's... Jesuit should have put on an LP.
They were going to, actually. I did cover art for it, and it was really bad art. So bad that Aaron Turner actually wrote me and was like, I think you could have done better, man. That was terrible. And I felt so bad, but he was so right. Oh man, yeah,
they should have put on an LP.
Yeah, they were too dysfunctional, but they were fucking great.
Yeah, and Milltown put on an LP.
Yeah, I never heard of Milltown. Known of them for years, never actually ever heard of them.
They're awesome, and they actually, from what I understand, because Mark Thompson told me, he's like, they did get signed to like a major, and then they just like the band just went. And like they had the songs, I guess, for the LP, and then it just, that was it. An odd mixture. You had Brian McTernan, and the dude from Only Living Witness.
Okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Oh, that man, I know what you're talking. I've never heard them, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, they're awesome. Still like them. But that's about
Only six. He only had six.
Five.
All right, well, I added one, so.
Well, I will do mine. I don't know if you guys have heard these guys before, but I really, really was in love with, for years, this band End to End.
Oh, I remember them.
We know who they are.
They were on the same label as Chain of Strength on that one record.
Yeah, they're on Foundation.
Yeah.
It's like ex-members of Justice League, right?
I think so. Later, Indecision put out like re-release.
You do, Damien, you do realize that we're like all the same age, right?
I know, but I felt like that band never really left the West Coast.
Oh, there was a period where I was like obsessed with West Coast hardcore. Like Against the Wall and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Still like Against the Wall.
Yeah, I just that end-to-end 7-inch, the drums are so fast, but they're not like grindy or anything because it's kind of before all that stuff. But that drummer does that fill that I love where it's like super fast and kind of slows down. So they go, brr-ra-ka-ka-ka. I fucking love that fill.
Hey, speaking of end-to-end, wasn't the singer of end-to-end then the singer of Eyelid?
You know, I think you're right. I can't say for sure, but I also remember that guy having a killer voice. Like it seemed.
Yeah, well, not killer enough for Eyelid.
Right, but for End to End, I remember thinking like his voice was like a little more brutal than most hardcore voices were at the time. I mean, I listened to it not too long ago, and I remember it didn't age quite as well as I thought it had.
What, End to End or Eyelid?
End to End.
Okay, so I was gonna say Eyelid is still awesome even today.
I think I had a 7-inch. I don't remember what they sound like, to be honest.
You had garbage. You had garbage.
Wow.
You need bold statement.
You need If It Kills.
It might not resonate quite the same way now.
Wait,
were
what?
They, I mean, I feel like they were kind of part of that whole, like, Gehenna and Apartment 213 and, like, that sort of...
Who, Eyelid?
Yeah. Like, are they kind of part of that? Like, post-hardcore guys doing, like, heavier music?
Go listen to the LP, I mean, if you never did. The one on Indecision.
I'll check it out.
Brian will back me up on that LP.
No, it's good. I just don't know if it would resonate the same way hearing it for the first time now. That's the only thing. Like, I like it because I loved it when it came out, but I don't know if I heard it for the first time now to get the same out of it.
You know what happens to me when I listen to stuff like that? I get transported back.
That's fine. I'm saying if you didn't hear it then and you hear it for the first time today.
Oh, if you didn't hear it then, you heard it now. You got a point that it might be a different, totally different ball game.
Okay, I was doing a little reading while we disappeared there for a second. I had John Roa, that's the singer,
and that's the one who's in Eyelid.
Yeah. All right, cool. I'll have to go and see. Ooh, look, Eyelid. On the Indecision site, there's free MP3s to download for the Eyelid record.
Yeah, If It Kills.
Sweet.
I really went just based on the title of the record alone. I was like, If It Kills. I'm like, that's pretty cool. I'm like, if you're going to call your LP that, you guys can't suck anymore. And lo and behold, they didn't suck anymore. But, hey, whatever.
Man, Dave Mandel is still releasing records. I thought he was done. he's re-releasing the Sparkmarker LP.
Yeah, that I don't know why, though.
I mean, I love Sparkmarker, but I don't know why either. Like, I mean, I would probably buy it, but I can think of maybe four other people that would.
You know what? I listened to that 500-watt burner, and that... Yeah, that I don't think that record like aged very well.
That's with Kim singing though. I think, right?
I believe so. It's the one on Crisis.
Yeah. Now the one that Dave's putting out is the very first record, which is with Ryan singing, the original singer.
Okay.
They were great back then.
Is that when they were on tour with you?
Yeah. They recorded with Don Fury. While we were on tour. Like, they went to New York and recorded that record, and it was awesome. And Ryan's voice was so rad. I mean, when Kim took over, they were fine, but they just weren't really – they lost that
thing.
They did.
They recorded that LP over there, too, at Don Fury's.
Oh, did they? Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess Kim must have really enjoyed that experience, but
–
there you go. All right.
Did you go to Rainfest? Probably not.
No, I didn't. I thought about it. They were doing the Strain thing there, but
yeah. Who sang for them? Did Greg from Trial sing?
He did a song. Fuck, someone else did a song. It wasn't just like one person.
No, I know.
Yeah, it looked cool. I mean, there's some videos online of it.
Yeah, I saw some of it. And I was like, is that Greg?
Yeah, there's the new, you know, the new Hoopla is the Champion singer thing. I don't know if we want to talk about that at all, but I mean, I never cared for Champion, but you hear about that thing, right?
I have never listened. I know who Champion is.
And oh, it just came out that guy's like a huge creep and apparently had like molested a bunch of girls.
Oh, that's rad.
And they were supposed to play Rainfest, and that came out beforehand, and that's why they didn't. Like, apparently some like 14-year-old girl like interviewed her for a zine, and he like tried to get her to like bring another 14-year-old over and like,
ew,
like get in the bath with him and stuff, and
ooh,
said all this really inappropriate shit. He's apparently a skeevy dude.
Dude, that's
it's a bummer.
Not a bummer. That's fucking gross.
Yeah, it is gross.
Fucking hang that dude up by his nuts,
or send the shadow after him.
Dude, that's fucking sick.
Yeah, it's messed up.
What was a 14-year-old girl doing interviewing him anyways?
She had a zine. Total, like, adorable, hardcore thing to do, like, be 14, and I'm going to do a zine, and I love this band from here, and I want to talk to him at a show and get his number and do an interview and stuff, and, you know, whatever. It's just the way those things start to happen, but he took advantage of the situation, apparently. And once she came forward, like, a bunch of other girls came forward, apparently, were just like, yeah, that guy's a fucking scumbag. Here's what he said to me, here's what he did to me, here's all the stuff.
That's gross, so, man.
Yeah, so that dude's out of the scene.
That's way fucking gross.
Mm-hmm. Totally lame.
Oh, not even lame. That's just disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Certainly not the best thing ever.
The name of the band is stupid too.
Is that, did everyone?
I was trying my hand at a segue.
I was gonna say, I don't know if everyone's picks were done or not.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh yeah, now we're just making someone feel worse. Hopefully.
Well, then I guess we can. Just whatever that was, we can, I guess, move on to best thing ever for the week then. I'm actually going to go with something that was pretty awesome a few weeks ago, but I didn't mention it till now. I know I talked about my fuzz pedal on here, but I also have an overdrive pedal now by the same company, Donner. And I'm really digging these pedals because they're super small, they're super, super sturdy, and they're really cheap. And they sound fantastic, so yeah, again.
And they make you feel sexy.
They do. I touch my guitar with loving care while I play.
Touch yourself.
When I first bought it that night, because obviously it's overdrive, that's more of a blues-driven pedal, I played the shittiest blues you've ever heard in your life for about 2 hours. It was pretty fun.
That was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. I was having fun, but if my neighbors were listening, they were like, Jesus Christ! But yeah, I had a blast. It rules. Another awesome pedal purchase by me.
Yeah, I'm gonna check one of those pedals out. I've been eyeing their delay pedal for a while. I can never have too many delay pedals, and it's they're so small. Like, it doesn't take up any real estate on your board. So,
oh, have you seen them in person?
No, I've just seen a comparison shot of like how big they are to a human hand.
Yeah, like, I mean, I understand I have, like, big, fat hands, but, like, if I put it in my hand and close my fist, like, you can't see it. They're great. I love them. And they're super sturdy. And they're $30. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I've got the delay on my list. I just, I had to buy shoes last week, so nailed it.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, yesterday, oh, no, backing up. 2 days ago at lunch, watching TV at lunch, and they're talking about on TV about this new dating app called Uglyr, spelled Uglyr. So anyway, Uglyr.com, it's like a dating app for people who have given up. So fast forward to the next day, we're sitting at lunch again, and this girl that we eat lunch with said something about, oh, you should do that for your woman. And I go, I will do that as soon as I get one. And she's like, she's like, well, maybe you need to go on that uglier.com and get meet somebody. And I was just like, wow, that was really rude. And she said, I'm just kidding. She's like, you're not that terrible. Boom, boom. So
hey, that's nice.
I'm not that terrible.
Yeah, that's nice.
That's pretty good.
Dude, you should put that as your tagline on every dating profile from now on.
I'm embarrassed to admit that I have a dating profile, period. But yeah, you're probably right. That would be a good way to just sell myself. Now, I'm not that terrible. Because, you know, you figure 99% of the guys out there are like, oh, I'm the best. And then every picture is them crushing a beer can on their forehead or holding up a giant fish with no shirt on.
Or taking a weird selfie in front of their bathroom mirror.
Yeah, and like they have their underpants like suspiciously a little low on their pelvic region.
So you can see their Calvin Klein boxer briefs.
So you could see, yeah, so you could see just above the pube line, and here's me like just in a t-shirt like So I'm not
just
that
just alluding to the mystery.
I'm not the worst.
And we got to start taking this podcast to conventions, man. Then you meet some people.
It's true. They'll all be married though, but that's neither here nor there, I suppose. So yeah. That's my best thing ever. I'm not the worst.
Nice. Chris, what's there? We go.
Best thing ever. Finding the Grip 7-inch on YouTube.
Yeah, rediscovering that's great.
All that reminds me of is that I owned that record at one time and I sold it, and that means somebody bought it. So somebody has my Grip 7-inch and 10-inch somewhere on this planet, like on purpose. And they may even be listening to it right now. It's probably the singer of the band. Oh, man, my life used to rule.
These lyrics really speak to me.
Well, dude, it's like... Why would you even... I'm surprised Mike Hartsfield like heard that and said, yeah, dude, I'll put it out. Like, really?
Mm.
Even by 90s standards, that's terrible.
Is it, though?
He could have focused on getting Drift Again to do more songs than just that one.
Funny that you should say that.
Oh, God.
Yeah, man. Oh, man, I was so into that shit.
It's so hilarious that you mentioned it because it was playing already before you even said Drift Again.
Man, I loved that song. I'm sure. Dun, 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 I mean,
the cold season!
Yeah, what you just played sounded awful, but when I was a kid, I was just like,
awfully good.
Yeah. Living in the woods. So, is that your best thing ever? The Grip 7-inch?
No, to be back home.
Oh, that's great.
Because Utah's kind of, I don't know. It's okay. It's if you're into outdoor sports, camping, all that kind of stuff, then Utah's not for you. But Utah, like, my brother-in-law kept saying, dude, you gotta move out. You guys should move out here. I said, one, Mormons, too many Mormons. Two, too many whites. Three, no professional hockey. Three strikes, you're out.
Four, they have Sundance every year. So that's kind of, like, awesome.
Yeah, yes. But it's, you know, it's funny. Because when we were talking about it on the messenger or whatever, I did forget how, like, Utah, or specifically Salt Lake City, like, in the 90s, mid to late 90s, they started getting a rep, you know, with all their thuggery.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that band Unconquered. I'm sure you remember them. They were, like, around 97, 98, I think.
I'm sure I heard them, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember what they sound like because I didn't own anything by them, but I remember, like, that whole spiel started when they were, like, you know, beating up people who weren't straight edge or whatever or something dumb like that. But when we just all started talking about it, you know, if you look up Utah, you find out Utah is, like, pretty much 75% white and Republican.
Yeah, man.
So, and I thought about it. I was like, oh, you know what? That really does reflect on their so-called hardcore punk scene. That whole Republican and white.
Yeah, I mean, that Mormon church is powerful, man. They're like the most, I think they're the wealthiest church in America. They had something like $300 billion in assets.
Awesome.
They own like I think the largest.
Because all religion chunk blows. Of land in the country. All religion blows, but that one blows even more.
I mean, I think they're all fake, but that one is like the most clearly fake one.
Yeah. And like, there are temples that like, as we were going to the airport, like I'm looking to the east, and like I forgot the mountains over there, what they're called, but like you could clearly see their temple stand up out and above, like it's watching the rest of the valley or the city.
Yeah, man, those fucking tides, they have to like they're not only encouraged but sort of harassed into making sure they give 20% of their gross income to the church every year. Like, and some people will do like double and triple tithes, so people are paying those people like all of their money.
But yeah, there's too many white people there.
Yeah, Salt Lake City did have a club called Kilby Court, though. That place was awesome.
The only thing cool I can think about Utah is Insight and Iceburn, and that's pretty much one and the same. So that's just one thing.
Yeah, I like Iceburn. I like Gentry. I like even like Eagle Twin.
So, but yeah, it's. My nephew graduating, I don't know how many Sierras I heard that were graduating and how many Michaelas I heard that were graduating. It's like, dude, fucking A. And how many blonde-headed chicks. I was like, dude. God, this is like Hitler's wet dream.
Mm-hmm. Loved it.
I think that's Utah's state motto.
I don't know, dude, but, like, it's – there really isn't that much diversity there. And it's – to me, that's kind of – that kind of creeps me out when there's just way too many white people around.
Why are you always trying to hang out here, then?
Oh, by you?
No, that was funny.
You guys – you got – Tinley Park makes – Utah makes Tinley Park look like – Brooklyn, New York.
Nice.
Sweet.
But well, it was fun. But nice. I can't believe you. Like, he told me, like, on a few instances, you guys got to move out here. I'm like, dude, there's no way on God's fucking green earth that I will move to Utah ever. I said, if anything, I'll go to, like, Boston. He goes, that's just, like, another big city. I go, yeah, the transition would be a lot easier for me. I don't want to be surrounded by all these whites and all this openness, and it's just, no. And hillbilliness seems to kind of run rampant over there, too. It's like a place where, like, you know, like Southerners move to because it kind of still feels like the South.
Yeah, I get that. I bet you're right.
Because you got religion is a big deal out there, and there's a lot of farm. And, like, I hit my nephew's graduation, like, you know how many people I hear hooting and hollering whenever their nephew, cousin, brother, sister, son, daughter was graduating? I'm like, dude.
Sometimes all the same person.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, you're not supposed to yell during the graduation. My God. Hillbillies. Glad to be back in Chicago where things are normal.
Well, welcome home from Seattle.
Thanks.
I'll do mine real quick. Mine is going to be my weird dreams I've had lately. They've been really, really, really weird and really fun.
With Brian?
No, but because we talked about Justified last podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I think
what?
Yeah. I misspelled a name in my tweet about it because that was the only way for me to remember it. And I mentioned you guys. But I had a dream that I was Raylan Givens and I was hired to go arrest Bill Paxton. It was really strange.
That's okay. I once had a dream that Samuel Jackson was shooting me.
I had the Terminator coming after me.
When you told me about your dream and you told me that a cow was chasing you and you woke up, your dream was actually going to be my best thing ever at one point this week.
Oh, really?
I was like, oh my God, that's the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Someone well, I had one just the other night that was just as strange.
Was the cow like chasing you saying, drink my milk?
No, it was just like a normal cow. It was just like, but, you know, it was, like, coming at me, so. Yeah, no, no, yeah, no, you know, and I remember it was actually, I had to arrest David Hasselhoff for Bill Paxton. Bill Paxton hired me. Like, I don't know why it was all celebrities and all random guys. Like, why David Hasselhoff? I mean, my daughter likes SpongeBob. He's in that movie. Maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. Who knows what the hell is going on in my brain?
And it'd just be cool if, like, in your dream, like, the chief of police was Benny Hill or Red Fox.
If I dream longer, maybe. Yeah. It's just, they've all been real strange lately, and it's been real fun. No scary ones, just real weird ones. Dreamed I had to drive someone to Iceland, and I totally did, and it was like a fun road trip.
How did you work the whole Atlantic Ocean deal?
There apparently was not one in my dream.
Oh, okay. It's a bridge.
Yeah. Or we just were suddenly there or something. But it was like it was like one of those, I don't know if you have like adventure dreams, and like a bunch of fun stuff happens. It was like that. It was fun. That's it. Yeah, word.
Just let me know later on what it is you're eating to have these, and I would like to join the club, because I usually don't have any dreams, because I don't stay asleep long enough.
I will let you know.
Alrighty. Well then, I guess that's going to wrap us up for the week, and you can find me on Twitter at XorsonX, you can find Brian at Pure Rock Fury, you can find Chris at SkateXEdge, you can find Damien at Damien Johnston. Don't forget to go to ReviewAndRoast.com, check out all the goodness there, and buy movie tickets from us so that we can put, you know, some stuff into the stuff. And
more ads.
Yeah, right, more ads. And we'll see you next week.